Well, good morning. Good to see you all today. I should probably just give you a warning right up front. Could get a little rowdy in here today. We've got some spring breakers. And so Brian and Caleb, yeah. So the rowdy bunch on the back. So we'll doing their best to look innocent. We're glad to have them and all of you. I'm experiencing a little bit of congestion today. My wife thinks it's allergies, and I'll go with that. But we'll try to avoid being too aggressive with the symptoms. I've got a cough drop in my pocket here if I need it. But I'll avoid shaking hands after church just in case there's something to share. But it's been a busy week, and I know you guys have stayed busy, and it's a busy time of year. Are we a little low today?
No. Well, it's a little high, isn't it?
A little high? Okay. Low. Okay. Between sound and temperature, it's hard to keep everybody happy. But we are looking at Isaiah 26 today. And both 25 and 26 have been a wonderful variation on some of the ground that he has covered. Isaiah saw the darkness of the coming decline of the world, and yet we find here, in particularly these two chapters, a bright spot in it all. And so Isaiah 26:1 begins like this: "In that day shall this song be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. Salvation will God appoint for walls and bulwarks." Okay, and as always, whenever we read from literature which was written a very long time ago, we have to transport our mind in thinking the terms that are meaningful here. And so Isaiah's talked a lot about strong cities. He's talked about how that the strong cities fall. And it is the picture of strength to see a fortified city. You see a castle, if you're on the outside wondering how you're going to get in, it seems impossible. How could those defenses ever possibly be breached? And yet Isaiah is continually almost poking fun at the strength of the cities that man has built. He says they're going to be destroyed. They're going to be like dust, pile of rubble. And so now, a city of strength that he talks about, it has for walls salvation. It's a little bit of an odd comparison in some ways, because you're comparing something which is physical, bricks and stones and timbers, to a concept. But it shows his disdain for the strength that men trust in. And of course, what are the walls for? They're for salvation in a real city, right? So the idea of building these walls is to save us from the enemy. He here is presenting a city which truly brings salvation, and not with those material things which people are trusting in. So he says God will appoint this salvation for walls and bulwarks. "Open ye the gates, that the righteous nation which keepeth the truth may enter in." Okay, so the gates are open to the nation which is pursuing what is right, what is just, and keepeth the truth. wow, what a wonderful picture. We look around in our world today and we say, where does that nation exist, right? We sort of have to tighten our seatbelt every time we listen to the news or look at what's going on in the world. What new revelation will we encounter that shows how that, in fact, people in leadership have been defrauding their countrymen of what is valuable, have been lying about what in fact is going on. There was a time when we thought we could trust in certain things in our country, that you might the politicians are going to do stupid things. That's kind of what they do. There's some things you can depend on, right? We used to feel like we could depend on our military. That it's fine to talk about all these crazy ideas, but when it gets to where the rubber meets the road, when it gets to the foxholes and the shooting and the dying, it's pretty clear what the issues are. And yet, we are so far from that now in our country. It's questionable. What could we stand up to? What can we survive? Because we're more concerned about issues which have nothing to do with defense, with fighting ability. Those are the things that are occupying our budget the minds of our leadership. So a nation that is truly looking for what is right, what is true, what a beautiful thing. And then verse 3 here, yes.
On, the ESV says, the nation that keeps faith may enter in. Interesting switch there.
And so, that of course would set it up for the next verse. There are some various translations here, particularly I was going to look at that in verse 3. So the word in verse 2, which is translated truth in KJV, can mean faithfulness. But it's not really connected linguistically to the word used in 3, because he trusteth in me. Perhaps that's why that King James went with truth. It actually, I guess, is only translated as truth here in this particular passage. And faithfulness, as we have seen, is one of the huge topics on Isaiah's mind when he talks about how the nation should walk. So, yeah, good point there. That perhaps should be thought more of in those terms. But that brings us to verse 3, which is a verse I heard, I think, often in my childhood. At least it was one that was impressed on my mind. And yet I probably couldn't have told you where it was in the Bible. So one of the great things about reading Isaiah this way is to give an anchor for verses that perhaps are floating around somewhere there in your mind, but you've never connected. Verse 3 says, "Thou will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee." Now that's easily a standalone verse, highly quotable, would be a great verse to put on any plaque on any wall. And of course, it does have context, but it is so complete in its expression. Thou will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. And I asked myself this morning as I was studying this: do you really believe that? Is that something that, in the face of the world that we live in, is that something that you live by? Does Isaiah intend that to be taken as literal as it seems? And my answer is, well, yes, I think so. I do embrace that as the truth, as fundamental. That is the issue. And then I was thinking a little more on it, and so it's interesting in life how the emphasis of what you are thinking about, that is to say, the things that interest you and what you are concerned about, kind of change over time, somewhat with age. But I can remember a time in my life where I was somewhat younger, and I was particularly concerned with this whole matter of the mind. I don't know if really things change that much as you grow up about what you perceive people to be saying, or if you're the one that's changing. But there was certainly a time in my life where what I was hearing from religious leaders was much more an emphasis of what would be termed spirituality. So what's important is that you're spiritual, although that wasn't often defined in a way that I understood it. And so the importance of doing various, quote, spiritual activities, reading your Bible, praying, this kind of thing. And in my own experience, I didn't find real fulfillment in just doing something because somebody said do it. And I sort of developed along the line, well, you know, it is important that you develop how you think, your mind. Your mind is important. And if you're not developing that, you can read and not even understand. The fact that you read words doesn't get it in your heart, doesn't change your life. And so in my understanding, this importance of the mind as being committed to God and pursuing Him. And so this verse is like, okay, wow, I like this, whose mind is stayed on thee. Well, it is important, if you're going to develop some theory about life, that you do a little research on what words mean and realize that maybe the author didn't have quite in mind to support your notions like you would like for it to be. And that was the case with this verse. And so I did a little bit of looking this morning, and this word that is mind here, in fact, this is the only passage that's translated mind. It means, first of all, a framework, a purpose, a form. It can mean pottery. There you are, mind, pottery. Even a graven image. In the realm of purpose, it can mean imagination. But it wasn't nearly as nice a slam dunk support of my notion as I'd hoped. What is Isaiah saying here? What is it that's supposed to be stayed on God? And the word stayed means to rest on, support on. So that makes sense. Okay, that's kind of what we expect that to mean. Well, he's not specifically singling out the mind as that faculty of human nature, which is distinct from the body or something else. It's more of a broad, your general foundational framework, purpose. And so it's not, in practice, all that different. That all happens in your mind. But it's not just quite as simple as I might have hoped. Some comments from the commentator we've been looking at. Another thing that comes out of this verse when you start looking is that this expression, perfect peace, that's such a beautiful concept, perfect peace. Not just peace, but perfect peace. Well, if you just do a on the cursor look at words, there's no perfect in there. It's just peace. So how do they get that? And so we find out from those that actually can read the Hebrew that literally it's peace, peace. So it's the Hebrew mechanism or idiom for expressing perfection. You repeat something. You emphasize it by saying it again. So the word perfect is not in there, as we would do in English, but peace is repeated. And so you don't get that by just putting your cursor on the word. You have to be able to look at the Hebrew. So that is a fair translation. So here it is true peace as compared with pseudo peace, and total as excluding every disturbing element. Alex says that mind means the constitution and tendency of the mind, mediated purposes. I'm sorry, meditated purposes, or the human constitution. So, more of a frame of mind or a mindset. Well, that very much does speak of what's going on in the mind. How you approach the troubledness of the world around you? Do you allow yourself to be totally encompassed by the anxiety that would tend to be the result of just looking at the headlines? Or is your whole outlook on life leaning on this trust in God? And of course, the thing about trusting in God, you know, I think some people, when they say, well, I'm just going to trust the Lord, what they're trusting Him to do is what they want. When you trust, you have to turn loose, right? You're not, as long as you're hanging on, you're not trusting. You don't trust the bridge until you step on it. If you're hanging on to a rope to partially support yourself and uncertain foundation, you don't turn loose of the rope until you're sure that what's under you will hold. And so trusting God means to trust Him to do what is best. It's to trust Him to do what He wants, but as well we trust that what He wants is what is best for all of creation. And so that creates a very different type of living and a very different type of mind than the one that is instead looking for how to work out what I think is best. How should things go in this world according to my opinion, my assessment? Because we all tend to have a matter of opinion on things. And it's easy for us to lose sight of what a big word trust is. It becomes a byword. Well, we'll just have to trust the Lord. Do you know what you just said? Do you really mean that? Or do you mean I'm just not going to talk about it anymore? Do you mean I'm going to give up thinking about it? Just hope it works out. Well, Isaiah says that will keep him in perfect peace, whose whole mindset is stayed on Thee, because he trusteth in Thee.
The tricky part for me is, you know, there are times when we are responsible to work out a situation, and trying to find that place where we say, all right, I have done all I know to do, and I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I know God does, and Lord, I'm just going to now leave it with you. So there is that time of not perfect peace when you're trying to figure out what is your... I mean, in the back of my mind, I ultimately believe he will help me through this. But there's a little bit of an agitation with the waters, you might say, while I'm trying to figure out what my responsibility is in making something happen.
And you know, there's a couple different realms that we have to deal in, right? There is the big picture eternal realm where we leave it all in his hands. But there is the short term in this life realm where if I see on the radar that we're about to get clobbered by a rainstorm, I plug in the sump pump, right? I don't just trust God to keep the water out. If I see there's a tornado coming, I take cover. So, yes, and occasionally there probably is a bit of discernment needed in knowing where you cross one line into another. But
even turning on the sump pump or whatever is you're trusting God. You know how these things work. You're trusting, you know, and that's a fairly cut and dried situation. It may be in relationships, which are a lot less cut and dried, where you're saying, I'm trying to do my part as best I know God would want it done, and that whole letting go of, you know, not he mentioned a few minutes ago, it's not what I want to make happen here, but it is trying to figure out what his mind is, guidance is, whatever is, and follow it. We can just sit back past it. I don't know what I'm saying, but we all have to take steps. We all have to act. We all have to, and what we choose to do is itself based on trusting.
And how we do it too, because you can panic and, oh my God, I control this water or whatever, or you can say, well, I'm going to do the best I can do. Plug it in and let it be. There's a difference.
But Kurt did introduce an important element there, and that is considering how that our trust of him shapes our living. A lot of times when we talk about trust, it sort of has the implication of, well, I'm not going to do anything, right? I'm just going to trust in God because I'm out of my element here or whatever. But in fact, our trust in him forms our worldview to the point that we know he wants order. We know he wants life to proceed and to prosper. And as his children, we have a role to play in that. If we don't keep the water out, it could affect others as well, right? So, thanks for pointing that out, because that is always to be a key element of our understanding of trust. It's not the end of the road. It is what opens new roads for us, because we embrace his view of how the world should be. And it causes us to take action.
The struggle is not trusting myself. So, you know, I have my part to play, and I don't trust myself to make the right or the wisest decision. And I've had to get to the place where my trust in God then leaves me in a resting place of, and so I screw it up. Can I trust him to work for me the good in my life through that thing that I really wish I made a different decision on, or hadn't turned out the way that it had? I mean, you're not trusting him if you're stressing out all the time about, oh no, I made the wrong decision, now what do I do, or what if this is the wrong? Because that's what keeps me up at night. It's it's not that I don't think God can handle it, it's me trying to figure out what is the right thing in this situation, and then what if I choose wrongly? Well, what if? Can I trust him with mess up then? Do I trust him to take that and bring good for my life? Because he knows that I was doing my best,
And that is a key, that little bit there, because you could just say, what if, and not do anything.
Right?
So you don't do that, and I know you're not saying that, but realizing that, yeah, sometimes I don't get it right, but that's not, it doesn't mean that I am going to be rejected by him, or that my trust is not valid. It means I'm a human being, and I sometimes don't get it right. But we acknowledge, and you implied this, that before we make that decision, we look diligently at what he has given us as guidance. You can't trust him if you ignore what he said. Right? If you've been told how to do a job and you do it how you want and you fail, you can't go back to the boss and say, well, I did just what you told me to. Well, not really. That's not trusting or obeying in any sense. But part of that hashing things out, that loss of sleep process, is where you're going over in your mind, well, what would he have me to do? What information has he given me? How would I apply it in this situation? And knowing that you have been just in that process, you haven't accepted bribes, taken shortcuts in your own mind, allows you to stand before him in confidence and in peace.
Keith, there seems to be a fundamental truth that God is quite capable of working good, ultimate good, through our bad decisions. I mean, we all have, in various ways, at some point in our life, been intentionally counter to God, in all purpose, making decisions that were not correct, not for our good. Possibly even intentionally hurting others at some point. You look through history, people that have led terrible lives at some point and then made their peace with God. And I mean, Paul, for instance, you know, thought he was doing right in that case, but others not so much. And been able to work through that, you know, and you go from that point forward, trusting in God and doing the best that you can, but you still have all this stuff that you've done in the past that have consequences in your actions. And some things, it appears that there's it's permanent damage, and others, if you look back after a period of time, you see that God has worked, or it has worked out.
Right.
We don't know if it was, we don't know all the details, but it seems to me that there is a fundamental truth there that God can work with what we give him.
Right, so we glorify him at his ability to turn something ugly into something beautiful. But at the same time, if we're the one that's the object, every time we reflect on those things, we say, stupid. I was stupid. At least I do. And yet we thank him for his incredible transformative power in our lives.
It doesn't always make it easy in the moment. I mean, you discussed anxiety this earlier. And so, some of us may deal with that more than others, but just in the moment, you still grapple with it. But going back to the basics of he can work.
Yes.
He will work through this and work through what I do. We pray with good intentions.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of certainly a nuanced, kind of a complicated picture. It's not the simple, if man will just be perfect, then everything works out okay, because man's not. And yet, we are challenged to live in a godlike fashion. We are challenged to live like Jesus. And yet, in the bigger picture, God saves us from ourselves in order to bring us into fellowship with Himself. So, you know, it's the young, I guess, have a challenge to figure out what it is exactly we're saying. On the one hand, we say if you really mess up, God can make you great. And on the other hand, we're saying don't mess up. Well, those are both true. The fact is, the fewer scars that you enter maturity with, the more tools you have to use for His glory. But we also recognize that we need redeemed, and He is our Redeemer. But I do like this verse. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Verse 4, trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. Okay. So Isaiah says this on reflecting on all of the power in the world that he sees. The mighty cities, the mighty armies, the chariots, the ships, all of the power of man that seem to bring security. We could say it in our day as we look at all the power of man that seems to bring security. All the bombs, all the missiles, all the technology. Trust ye in the Lord. He is everlasting strength. And of course, part of going through that process in your mind is the acknowledgement that that may mean that my life may not be long. Right? So to somebody listening to this, it's like, yeah, but they might blow me up. Well, you're going to die someday. Did I say that? Yeah, I did. We're all going to die someday. And so if you're totally concentrated on keeping that from happening, you're going to be very frustrated when it does. Because you have nothing else to lean on. I mean, that's the end, right? I failed and it's over. If, in fact, your trust is in a bigger picture on a different level, the thing which is inevitable, unless he comes back before it happens, the thing which is inevitable is not the end, is not fatal, is not a huge catastrophe. It's a minor inconvenience. So that is what we're saying. You trust in the Lord. He is everlasting strength. And whatever happens in this world, is but a passing thing. Now, reality check. Well, is that true? Will he be there for you? Well, that's what trust is all about. Given all the evidence we have in history, given the witness of his son, I'm willing to take that risk. And it makes for a very different life. Isaiah says, for he bringeth down them that dwell on high, the lofty city. He layeth it low. He's really intrigued by this particular metaphor. You see it over and over in his writing. You walk up to this huge, strong, towered city, and he says, it's going to be a pile of rubble. Even to the ground, he bringeth it even to the dust. The foot shall tread it down, even the feet of the poor in the steps of the needy. The way of the just is uprightness. Thou, most upright, dost weigh the path of the just. Okay, another translation of that from the ESV is, the path of the righteous is level. You make level the way of the righteous. Okay, so as you go through life in a vehicle, you encounter lots of different roads. There's nothing quite so sweet as a recently well-paved road. You just sail along if you've got good tires and everything's in alignment and good shocks. It's just like riding on a cloud almost. And there's nothing so terrible as a road that is in such disrepair. I used to joke, when we first went to Louisiana, I said, Rachel, it's smoother riding over here on the rumble strips than it is on the interstate. when you get that rough, you know, you got problems, right? Another thing that happens, and I don't know what technologically goes wrong exactly, but there's a section of Kanoka Road between the interstate and 37. It seems like the concrete sections have individually shifted, and it's just constant, ba-dump, 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 and the whole car. It kind of depends on your wheelbase and your weight as to how bad it is, but under certain circumstances, it just is painful. And you can imagine without road graders and earth movers and all the things that we have to make a good road in the ancient world, the appreciation of a good road, a level road. And he says here, the way, the road of the just is, in this other translation, is level. Well, we all know there are trials in life, but in terms of your relationship with God and the peace that He brings, there is a levelness there that the world doesn't experience. There is a constancy. There is a security that they don't know about, which I can see that metaphorical use of a level road being comparable to. Verse 8, yea, in the way of thy judgments, O Lord, have we waited for thee. The desire of our soul is to thy name and to the remembrance of thee. With my soul have I desired thee in the night. Yea, with my spirit within me will I seek thee early. For when thy judgments are in the earth, the inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. And keep in mind, I stress this a lot, so I don't want to be a broken record, but I have to tell myself as well, so I figure that you deserve as much. Anytime you're talking about judgment, you should connect that with justice. So often the term judgment in English has gotten in such a pejorative sense that judgment is something you want to stay as far away from as possible, right? Judge not that you be not judged. But the linguistic concept behind this language is that of justice. Well, everybody wants justice. People are constantly suing one another because they feel like they're not getting justice. They're looking for justice. And so the justice that God brings to the world is true justice, is justice indeed. And that's what we long for. We long not to see different political notions advanced as justice, but rather what is truly just. And then, of course, justice and righteousness are intimately connected, because what is right is justice. So anytime that you see those words in a verse, as you're trying to make sense of it, and please do try to make sense of verses when you read them. As wonderful as the Bible is, it's not magic. And if it doesn't serve its intended purpose of communicating something to your mind, you're not going to get any benefit from it, I don't think. I never did when I was just reading in order to have said I read. It was only when I started saying, what does that mean? What do those words mean? And so, justice is something we all long for, and the justice of God in particular, because He knows the secret inner thoughts of every person, the motives, the actions. And so He is in a position to judge justly. Isaiah says, let favor be shown to the wicked, yet will he not learn righteousness. In the land of uprightness, he will deal unjustly and will not behold the majesty of the Lord.
What does favor mean?
So, let's see what the... I know what it means to me, but let's see what it means here.
It reminds me of a quote, shield a fool from his folly and you'll fill the world with fools. If favor is shown to the wicked, he doesn't learn.
So, for some reason, this is not doing anything. Here we are. To be gracious, to show pity. So, pretty much... what it suggests, right?
It's more like if favor and let favor. If you let favor be shown, will he not learn righteousness?
Okay, so I'm not sure about that. Let's look at some other translations.
The ESV feels that way.
Okay. Verse 10. Oops. Well, okay, so I mean, all of them are pointing to the same thing. The point is that it doesn't accomplish anything to show the wicked mercy, to pity them or to favor them, because they're still going to deal unrighteously. And, of course, the prime, I think, idea to have here is keep this in the realm of the will. God has a will. God has a will for what is just, what is righteous. The wicked have their own. That's what makes them wicked. They want to do what they want. They don't care what God wants. And so if you have somebody who is motivated to take advantage of everything in life to their own purposes, giving them a gracious response doesn't change their intentions. It just sort of, it's nice, you know. Well, I'll take that, and I want that, and that, right? So they don't respond to the kindness of grace.
You tend to think everyone thinks like we do, and you have to separate yourself from that mindset sometimes. Because as a truster in Christ, it's like, well, if this was done to me, I would respond this way. It's like, well, that's
right.
That's not necessarily, you actually may be doing damage, or at least know
that. It's a good reminder, isn't it?
Yeah, this is not going to turn out the way you think.
Yeah. You know, another thing is, in trying to treat others as we want to be treated. We want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, don't give the wicked the benefit of the doubt. there is no doubt. They are going to do wickedly even in a righteous environment. And so...
You threw some bail before.
Okay.
If you think about it. Pushed as far as just...
Yeah.
Out.
Yes, bail reform, right? That's just bizarre, you know. That whole way of thinking about things. And then, of course, tied to that, or part of the theory behind that, is this notion that there shouldn't be any prisons, no prisons. And I don't know if you remember, but I brought in an article from a professor in New York University that was proposing this. And the end result, you know, I like to try to understand how people think. Occasionally it challenges me to think differently. You know, maybe I didn't see it all. And so I'm like, how possibly can this work out in your mind, this notion that prisons are bad, you don't lock people up. What do you do about people that are being predators on others? And do you remember what he said in that article?
Wasn't it, if a society is strong enough, it can stand a few parasites?
Yeah.
Oh.
You just take it. It's a sign of your strength. It's just,
you know, until it's your child.
Yeah.
The predator has abused.
Yeah, it's like the elephant, right? He gets bit now and then by the flea or whatever, but it doesn't really hurt him. If you're really strong, then you just take it. And I'm like, wow. If the average guy knew this was behind all this, these guys would get booed off the stage and tarred and feathered and run out of town. This is ridiculous. No, you don't just take evil because you're strong. You make the whole world stronger by eliminating evil from preying on the vulnerable.
Well, for the most part, they don't accept the premise that there's evil and that people can be wicked. People are good. And it's the system that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Of course, who made the system and their environment? People. So... which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yes, it's a sad state of affairs whenever this kind of thinking is the current top-notch notion of how the world is.
Well, and it's just like things like climate change or lower emissions or whatever. When our country, the liberal mindset is, well, we're going to lead by example. We'll show them how they ought to live and, you know, crush our economy and make our people suffer for it. And then they'll do the same thing for their economy.
Of course, the example that I'm seeing is you buy a lot of stock in solar companies and then mandate solar.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You know, you can control what's coming. And so you position yourself to benefit from it. That's the example I'm seeing.
We talk about pharmaceuticals and biotech or anything like that.
No, no.
It's one of yours.
And, you know, are we concerned about justice? Yes, we are.
Yeah.
We're faced with the world and the problems that we're facing are problems of no justice at the highest levels of government. And so Isaiah is right on target here. You know, you read some of these verses and the language is sometimes obscures the message, but he is right on target of a human problem, the human situation, and God's alternative to it. Well, I think we are about out of time, so I don't know if our bell ringer today is going to perform that function or not, but... Please don't walk back there and do that. Thank you for your kind attention.
Seekest me.